Good morning, everyone. This morning we're reading from Path to Shiva, Lesson 23. Why are we not all knowing like Shiva? Shiva is perfection itself. Each soul shares his perfection inwardly, but outwardly is immature. Think of Shiva as a mighty oak tree and the soul as an acorn that will one day be a mighty tree itself. Lord Shiva's veiling grace, Tirodhana Shakti, veils the soul's all-knowingness. This is a loving power that limits and protects us so that we may learn and mature. This grace is in three parts. First, Anava makes us forget that we are unlimited. Anava is that which makes the soul finite and separate from God Shiva. Under its power, we are completely involved in the joys and sorrows of our particular life, not aware that we are a divine soul, one with God. Second, Maya, the world, offers us vast opportunities for experience. This gift from Shiva is our playground of experience. Third, karma, the law of cause and effect, is our instructor in the play of life. Together, anava, karma, and maya are known as pasha, meaning tether. An ancient analogy of a cowherd tending his cows illumines this idea. The cowherd is God, Shiva, called Pati. The cows represent souls, pashu, and the tether or rope with which Pati leads the cows is pasha. Yogaswami told Gurudeva, let go of the rope. At the time, Gurudeva didn't know it was this rope. Later on, he found out what kind of rope it was he was supposed to let go of. The rope of Pasha, a philosophical rope. The cowherd restrains and protects the cows with the rope, just as Shiva guides and protects souls with Anava, Karma, and Maya. Through many lifetimes, under the harnessing power of these three, our soul grows to maturity, and the three malas begin to loosen their grip. When the time is ripe, Shiva grants his revealing grace, Anugraha Shakti. When finally we yearn to know Shiva, the Sakguru appears in our life and gives us disciplines to help us evolve further. Finally, through his grace, the soul realizes its true identity with Shiva. The Tirumandaram explains, when the soul attains self-knowledge, then it becomes one with Shiva. The malas perish, birth cycle ends, and the illustrious light of wisdom dawns. And we have Gurudeva's quote, maya is the classroom, karma the teacher, and anava the student's ignorance. The three bonds, or malas, are given by Lord Shiva to help and protect us as we unfold. Yet God Shiva's all-knowingness may be experienced for brief periods by the meditator who turns within to his own essence. We have three points, therefore, karma, maya, and anava, put forth in this lesson. When we think of karma, you know, if I asked each of you here, well, what exactly is karma? The most common answer, which is a correct answer, is the law of cause and effect. We do something, and because of the law of karma, there's an effect. We have an action. Because of the law of karma, there's an eventual reaction that comes back to us. We all know that. But the point this lesson is making is more than that. It's saying karma is our teacher. It's in the lesson itself, and it's in Gurudeva's quote. So it's there twice. Karma is our teacher. Well, what is it teaching us? How is it teaching us? It's teaching us if we are observant of cause and effect, Otherwise, it's not teaching us anything. If we're not observant of cause and effect, we don't learn. What does that mean? We pursue certain kinds of actions, and eventually we realize that the reaction to that isn't something we want to experience. Therefore, we decide, well, why don't I not do that anymore? Because I really don't want to go through this that I'm creating for myself. We learn by studying the action we do and the reaction it causes. If we do that consistently, then what happens? We mature spiritually, or we're refining our behavior. We're learning. We're refining our behavior through studying action and reaction. So in that way, karma is our teacher, but only if we think about it. We have to engage in this process. Otherwise, it's not automatically our teacher. It's just automatically a reaction. The learning part, we have to engage in purposefully. Point I wanted to make before that point, I've got point one, two, and then I have point zero. I was supposed to read point zero first, but it's third on the list and I wasn't that sharp here, so I'll go back to the point before karma, because I wanted to go through karma, maya, and anava in order, but this is supposed to happen before karma. The shaktis, very important, and it's nicely stated in this lesson. It's not the main theme because it's the main theme of previous lessons, so I'm not dwelling on it at length. But the idea it's showing is it's natural for the soul to be totally involved in the world and uninterested in religion as a starting point. Because the world is fascinating, right? Just the internet without the rest of the world is fascinating. The world, oh boy, I'm awake, I can enjoy the world. So fascinating, and getting even more so because we're creating realities within realities within realities, right? So we've got virtual realities. But it's natural for the soul not to be interested in God when it starts off. And then it starts to get a little bit bored with the world. Because the world, though it looks like there's a lot of different activities and possibilities in the world, there's certain basic patterns that are common to them all. And eventually the world by itself isn't that satisfying. We want a little bit more. We say, well, the world's great, but you know, afterwards, after I accomplish things, I still feel kind of empty. So we naturally start to turn, and that's the idea, is Tirodhana Shakti has this, let's say the world is over here, Tirodhana Shakti has this turn toward the world to gain experience. And when we gain enough experience, we start to get interested in what's over here, which is God. So we start to turn gradually, get more and more interested in God as the power of Anugraha Shakti increases. So we don't want to criticize someone who's totally interested in the world. That's ridiculous. It's just a natural stage. We don't want to criticize ourselves if we used to be totally interested in the world. It's just a natural stage. God, Shiva, put us there on purpose to gain experience. Because through experience, we mature. So we naturally turn slowly and get more and more interested in God. That's the process. So back to Anava, Karma, and Maya. Maya is a very interesting concept. Looked it up in our lexicon. It's got two long A's. Maya. One of the troubles of English is we don't see the long and the short. She who measures, or morific energy, the substance emanated from Shiva through which the world of form is manifested. Hence all creation is also termed Maya. It is the cosmic creative force, the principle of manifestation, ever in the process of creation, preservation, and dissolution. Maya is a key concept in Hinduism, originally meaning supernatural power, God's morific energy, often translated as illusion. The Upanishads underscore Maya's captivating nature, which blinds souls to the transcendent truth. In Adi Shankara's Vedantic interpretation, Maya is taken as pure illusion or unreality. Saivism, it is one of the three bonds, bhasha, that limit the soul and thereby facilitate its evolution. For Saivites and most other non-dualists, it is understood not as illusion but as relative reality in contrast to the unchanging absolute reality. This is a very important point because the default understanding when we say Maya, this is Maya, is we're saying it's illusion. This is just Maya. Particularly, I put in the just, right? This is just Maya. All this is just Maya. What does the mind think? It thinks we're saying, oh, this is illusion. But imagine going to school, and if while you're sitting in the classroom, you're saying, this is illusion, this is illusion, this is illusion, you know, how much are you going to learn? Not going to learn anything because you don't think you're supposed to learn. So we don't want to have the viewpoint that the classroom is illusion. The classroom has its own reality. In English, we call it relative reality, meaning it's always changing. But it's real, it's there. We need to think of it as a valid environment that's put there for the purpose of learning through karma. So the classroom is very important and needs to be looked at as relatively real. Anavamala, impurity of smallness, finitizing principle. This is a lexicon. God's individualizing veil of duality that enshrouds the soul. It is the source of finitude and ignorance, the most basic of the three bonds, anava, karma, maya, which temporarily limit the soul. Anavamala has the same importance in agamic philosophy that maya avidya has in Vedantic philosophy. The presence of anavamala is what causes the misapprehension about the nature of God's soul and world, the notion of being separate and distinct from God and the universe. Anava obscures the natural wisdom, light, unity, and humility of the soul and allows spiritual ignorance, darkness, egoity, and pride to manifest. It is inherent in a maturing soul like the shell of a seed. When anava is ripe, anugraha, grace comes, and anava falls away. Anava is the root mala and the last bond to be dissolved. Oh, when the seed falls off, the shell, can't put it back on, right? So that's the idea there. It's the last one to be resolved. And when it falls away, then we're no longer able to think of ourselves as finite. We have to claim our infinitude, if that's the right word, to include that we are infinite. Then we have a related term, as this introduced, anavamala, so mala, impurity. This is mala with two short A's. Impurity, an important term in Saivism referring to three bonds called pasha, anava, karma, and maya. So just another way of describing the three bonds, which limit the soul, preventing it from knowing its true divine nature. So, a common form of mala is amala. So amala is, of course, without impurity. Why did I bring it up? Because we have mala, not to be confused with mala. Such is the English language confusing to us. Mala is a garland. Two long A's. Mala is impurity. Two short A's. Mala, or malai in Tamil, strand of beads for holy recitation, japa, usually made of rudraksha, tulsi, sandalwood, or crystal, and here always made of rudraksha, right? Also a flower garland, mala. So I just put that there to remind us that we need to be careful on the word mala, if we want to pronounce it correctly, and it has two meanings depending on if the A's are both long or they're both short. That's something an English speaker would easily get confused on. Mala, amala, mala. To summarize, the basic idea, therefore, is anava karma and maya. It's there. So we can mature the soul. Soul starts out immature. It matures through handling experience in a way that exercises self-control. Even if we're not totally successful in exercising self-control, we still get a little bit angry instead of a big blow-up. You know, we're not totally successful. The act of exercising self-control is what matures the soul, no matter how successful we are in 100% or not. The fact that we exercised our self-control and did better than we would have without exercising it is strengthening the soul or maturing the soul. And when we do that over many lifetimes, it becomes very mature, which is the goal. Before we turn away from the world, we want to be reasonably mature, and then we naturally get more interested in God, and in our pursuit of God, we're a mature soul. If we were an immature soul in pursuit of God, we'd always be at God's feet. God is great in all this, I'm down here, I'm small. But no, eventually, you know, we need to see our oneness with God, and to see our oneness with God, we have to be mature. Otherwise, we won't see it. So that moment is postponed until we can claim our oneness. That's the logic behind it. Have a wonderful day. Om Namah Shivaya. Om.